Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today is January 5th, and we have Charles Hugh Smith. Charles is author, leading global finance blogger, and America's philosopher, we call him. He's the author of several books on our economy and society, including A Radically Beneficial World, Automation, Technology, and Creating Jobs for All, Resistance, Revolution, Liberation, A Model for Positive Change, The Nearly Free University and the Emerging Economy, Pathfinding Our Destiny, Preventing the Final Fall of Our Democratic Republic, and Will You Be Richer or Poorer? His most recent book is Global Crisis, National Renewal, A Revolutionary Grand Strategy for the United States. His blog of twominds.com is one of CNBC's top alternative finance sites. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you, Richard. I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
Yeah, quite interesting. I mean, there's a number of issues and topics that are all linked and related that we'd like to cover. The trend is very disturbing, and you know, we have some ideas and suggestions, right, to always at the end on how everything can be improved and made better, and specifically referring to what we see happening in civil liberties. There seems to be a tension between civil liberties and state power, essentially. So by civil liberties, we mean privacy rights, property rights, civil forfeiture type of laws. And what we're seeing is an encroachment of civil liberties across a wide area, in large part due to the new technologies that have come on stream, you know, the internet, online type of technologies, different applications, different apps, as the case may be. And now the state has the means through this private sector alliance of these technologies to control power, essentially is what is happening. There are, of course, privacy regulations in place and legal infrastructure for property rights, but the question is, are they being observed? Are they being followed? Are they being disregarded? Your thoughts, Charles?
Yeah, Richard, I think that's a great summary of the topics that we want to discuss, which is, the legal tension between the state and civil liberties, of course, goes back to the founding of liberal democracies, which tasked the state with protecting the citizens' civil liberties. And of course, as time has progressed, we've added and strengthened many of the civil liberties that started out to be, you know, free speech and the basics of property rights. Well, now what's happened in the last, say, 20 years is technology has leaped ahead of the legal protections. And so, as you say, the privacy regulations are in the statute, but they're being ignored or disregarded or overridden. And the same can be said of our rights what we might call legal recourse. You know, that the erosion is across a lot of fronts. And I think that what we're discussing is the way that technology has enabled, like, facial recognition, shadow banning of social media accounts, as well as outright banning, the mining of personal data for state and private sector use. And so I think we're also talking about a global trend. In other words, say China, I think, is pursuing its surveillance state technology, but it's also using the private sector technology companies in China, right? And it just as the United States government has been using Twitter, Facebook, and social media. And so this alliance is all in the shadows, right? And like, for instance, I can speak directly to, I know I've been shadow banned because readers have tried to post URLs to my blog and it's been denied, or they've tried to retweet a tweet of mine and it's been denied. So all this kind of thing is hidden from us. And so we don't know how much our privacy has been violated. And so, and it's almost impossible to access any kind of authority that you would normally expect to have in our legal system. In other words, like, who do I contact to launch an investigation into whether I've been shadow banned? Where do I file my appeal? It's like, there is nothing. It's really like a Kafka novel where all this authority is in place and yet it's not accessible to us. And so I think what we're broadly discussing is our legal rights and legal system has to catch up to this enormous expansion of power that technology's enabled.
Yeah, totally agree. Because the whole idea is these civil liberties, property rights, privacy rights form the foundation of our system. So, you know, if that erodes, then it's not a good sign, right, for our system. And, you know, just even the property rights issue has recently been being eroded. Example in point are the Russian citizens that are being affected by the whole Russian sanctions. You know, in the past, it was at a government level where there was some blockage or you know, between governments, beginning of a war or something like that. But now it's down to the citizen level. So, you know, you've seen confiscation of assets on specific Russian citizenship holders, which is crazy, because now you're going to have you know, like Chinese citizens thinking, oh my God, I better pull out my money out of the U.S. or, you know, this, I don't feel comfortable, it might be confiscated, it might be frozen, you know, Persians maybe as well. It's, you know, where does it stop? So and it's not just the U.S. Even Switzerland has joined in on this. You know, up to now they've been very strict on this, but even now they're taking a similar approach. So your thoughts on that, Charles?
Yeah, I think that's a big topic. And of course, from the point of view of the state, confiscating private citizens' wealth is war by other means, right? And so, as you say, this is not a declared war, and yet it's being waged as a war. And so, again, where are the limits on state power? And they're obviously extremely fuzzy now, you know, that we thought they were hard lines, and then now it's become ambiguous where the state power ends. And there's also a domestic equivalent to this erosion of property rights, and it goes by the general name of civil forfeiture. And this has been a scandal in many states where the state passes laws supposedly against drug dealing and that kind of illegality, where, you know, an officer stops you, searches your car, and finds a big amount of cash. Then they confiscate the cash, your car, and under the basic assumption that you're guilty of drug dealing, because otherwise you would not have that much cash. And so there's like the most horrendous abuse of civil liberties, because it's like, wait a minute, what about the right to a trial, you know, and what about presumed innocent? Instead, yeah, these civil forfeiture things are basically presuming you're guilty, and then you have to prove by an extremely expensive, arduous process that you're innocent. And it's all like, well this again is like a Kafka novel where, you know, the innocent is now guilty and has to try to prove their innocence through like, and many of these cases run for years. And it's just so against the foundational principles of the law, of the rule of law, right? And so these things are disturbing because, again, it's like, where are the lines that we can count on that are going to protect us from state abuse or encroachment? And just as important, where are the hard lines to protect us from abuse from the private sector corporations who are using these technologies? And you mentioned, you know, we talked about surveillance and the use of facial recognition. I saw an article where a corporation that puts on concerts used facial recognition of everybody entering the concert. And they identified an attorney on the other side of some legal dispute they were having. And so they kicked that attorney out of the concert. Now, that to me seems extra legal. In other words, I don't believe that they had the power to do that as a legal entity. It's just a really big gray area. And so if your facial recognition isn't that a form of privacy? I mean, we need to have a discussion about, you know, the impact of these technologies on basic privacy rights. And to me, it seems obvious that unless you give permission to an agency or a government to use facial recognition, it should not be some sort of right that anybody can use, right? It should be your private, a part of your privacy. Civil liberties, that your information and your biometrics cannot be used by anybody without your permission. But we haven't had that discussion yet, and we need to.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And it's a fundamental question and issue here because it's all tied to the economy and the financial markets, right? Because if you're not comfortable, if you don't have that sense of confidence and trust in the system, in government institutions, why would you want to invest, you know, in that country or in that jurisdiction? It's all about the economy and the financial markets ultimately. So this erodes not only society in general and the legal infrastructure, but ultimately the economy, economic activity, growth, economic growth, financial markets, investment, right? Even foreign investment coming in from the outside into the country. So it's all going to affect that in a negative way because you're not comfortable putting in assets, your own money into places, into jurisdictions that are not stable, you know, legally. You're not sure what the legal implications are or the strength of the legal system. So it's all about, you know, confidence and trust. Your thoughts, Charles, on that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Richard. And I think I think we can also expand that to what states and agencies do in crises. In other words, where are the lines that protect us in a crisis? Because, for instance, in the global financial crisis of 2008-2009, there were, you know, in the U.S. and there were, and in the EU, there were like suddenly these rules changed overnight. Like, oh, well, we're not going to mark assets to market anymore. You're not allowed to short a variety of stocks. I mean, you know, there's all these restrictions are suddenly popped in and supposedly to protect, you know, the participants in the market, but it was really to protect the system from, you know, disorder but it's like, what about, you know, our rights to invest or pull our money out? And so as when things start unraveling, or there's disorder in the markets, then that's another element, is how safe do you feel your assets are going to be if the rules change overnight, and who's being protected? And of course, the answer is always told. We're told, oh, it's you guys, but it's all like, well, we're not so sure because, you know, we might find that we can't even withdraw our funds. Like, and that's an issue now with this whole cryptocurrency meltdown is people are finding out that they don't have the right to withdraw their funds, even if there are funds in the exchange. And so that whole kind of talk about a gray area, like I think it would really, it should create hesitancy for people in terms of investing, if you can't really count on being able to withdraw your money or short the market or have these assets marked to market. All that stuff went by the wayside overnight. So that's another issue, is where are the hard boundaries on state power? And it's sobering that there doesn't seem to be very many.
Any ideas on why it's happening, like the drivers, like from the state perspective, are they doing this intentionally or just they don't know, they're not aware of the privacy regulations, perhaps, or they're disregarding it in order to bring about whatever mandate or goal that they've set out? Or is this simply about, do you think this is simply about more control over the citizenry, staying in power? Any thoughts on that?
I think that's a great question, Richard, and I want to hear your thoughts on that. I mean, a couple of thoughts that occur to me is, number one, these is a sort of ontology of the technocracy and the technocratic mindset, which is we're the smart people, you know, we're the smartest folks in the room. And so we'll decide for you what rights you have. You know, I think there's an element of that, especially in technology relating to civil liberties, privacy. It's like, well, we're the smart guys here. And we're in charge. So we'll let you know what your rights are. And so I think that mindset is part of it. And I think also that there's sort of a teleology, meaning like an end goal or an end state to everybody that's in the state, you know, meaning the central government, is that, well, if there's any power out there, we need to control it. So in other words, when the FBI, for example, discovered that Twitter had all, you know, hundreds of millions of data bits that could be used or accessed, then I think the mindset of the central state is as a general rule, well, we need to control that. You know, that shouldn't be in somebody else's hands. And so it's kind of a expropriation of, if you will, of any new technological power by the state. And so the state is very kind of wary of some private enterprise having power that the state feels it should have, you know. And so I think there's that kind of mindset at work. And of course, the other one, which we all know of, which is, you know, vague threats are the ideal driver for like a rapid expansion of power to counter these vague threats, right? It was terrorism. Now it's, you know, non-state players. It's there's an endless amount of threats that are real. You know, for example, within the internet space, there's you know, this blackmail. You know, that we've planted a, you know, a virus in your computers, and if you don't give us money, then, or Bitcoin, then, you know, we're gonna destroy your, you know, network, etc. So there are real threats, but I think the mindset of the state and the agencies is we're going to take all this power first, and then we'll sort out how to protect the citizenry. And that I think is a very dangerous kind of mindset, you know, because it should be, we got to protect the citizenry, and we should only take as much power as we need. And we should be transparent about that, not like secretive and hiding it, which is what's happened in the last decade, right? That we don't know what was going on with social media and the government. So, yeah, I mean, transparency is key to any democracy, right? The citizenry have to know what's going on and be presented with a choice, right? I mean, otherwise you don't have a democracy. And I think ultimately that's really one of the issues we're talking about is where's our democracy if all of these decisions are being made in secret and outside of the public sphere.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole intention of like the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, that it looks to restrain this encroachment by government, which there's a tendency over time to happen. So it's not like there's this innate rights of the citizenry, but it's all based on restraining the encroachment over time by government, and trying to stay in control and trying to expand, instead of using technology, for example, like on the environment, we like to look at the concept of market environmentalism, which is based on four principles as defined by the Austrian Economic Center in Vienna, Austria. They emphasize property rights, decentralized solutions, and it's all about using technology and leveraging innovation instead of taking authoritarian type of processes and approach, which is the agenda environmentalism approach. So it's the same idea in that realm, the concept of, instead of using technology, instead of enforcing regulations, enhancing the legal infrastructure, there's the idea of just, going through using an authoritarian approach, disregarding the privacy regulations, eroding property rights. And that's exactly what we're seeing now.
Right. I think that's a very good point, Richard, and a good summary that what we really want and what we need to speak up and support as hard lines around state power and around civil liberties and privacy rights. In other words, there should be no ambiguity about what's allowed and not allowed, right? And that is not the case now, right? As you say, the erosion of kind of authoritarian mindset and like, we'll let you know, if we feel like it, what rights we're disregarding of yours, I mean, that obviously is not a democracy. And that's, it's worrisome because, it's kind of a slippery slope. And I think we're pretty far down that slope. And on the positive side, like there's been this, Matt Taibbi, the journalist, has done tremendous work exposing basically to, the light of day, what the connections of government agencies and Twitter has been. And it should be disturbing and sobering to anybody who cares about civil liberties. And hopefully it will inspire the public to demand these like hard and fast regulations that protect privacy. And I think that what we need is really simple laws, in other words, like facial recognition software is banned. It is not allowed without a court order or the permission of the person who is who's agreed to accept facial recognition in exchange for some benefit or by their own choice. In other words, everybody should be able to say, no, I don't, I refuse to give you permission to my biometric data, right? So I think, I think we need to have strict bans on all these technologies. Like it should not be allowed. It should be against the law to shadow ban somebody on social media. In other words, it should be, you are banned, but there should be a legal process whereby somebody in the social media corporation has to stipulate exactly what you did that violated their standards and then provide a means of appeal. And this has to be overlaid with legal recourse where we could sue these companies for violating our civil liberties and our privacy. And of course, these kinds of lawsuits within the legal system are, often have tremendous power, right? If you get a if you get a group of people that sues a corporation for violating their privacy, not only is the legal, you know, the fees gonna, you know, wake up the company, but it also brings transparency. So I think that's I think one of the things we're discussing is we really need to enforce transparency of how these decisions are being made for us without our permission.
Yeah, totally agree. So it's on the positive side, you know, what needs to be done? So you've mentioned a number of things, and it's essentially placing value on property rights, on privacy rights, as defined by regulations already in place.
Right.
You know, we've had there's federal privacy regulations, there's private sector privacy regulations. Obviously, property rights is the foundation of our system, the Magna Carta, you know, going back hundreds of years. And the whole idea of the rule of law to be observed, you know, all of this needs to have high value placed on it. And so what should happen is the translation of these regulations to be overlaid on these new technologies that are very powerful, you know, different types of internet technologies, applications on those internet technologies. So different layers of that, you know, they all need to have some type of processes, controls, could be IT controls that are implemented. It needs to be overlaid on top of the internet infrastructure and on top of the internet applications.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's an excellent way to put it, Richard, is these regulations already exist. They're already on the books, and it's like they simply need to be extended to cover, or as you say, overlaid on these technologies. And the one positive trend is in a state, it can be in the US, it could be a state, or in other countries, it could be a province or canton. And if a local government imposes higher standards for privacy and civil liberties protections on these global media technology companies, then if the state is copied, if other states copy those regulations, or the state is large enough like California, then it basically changes the global company, because it's like, then it's not worth it to them to have to set up two entities, you know, one that somehow meets all of California's regulations and yet another one for the rest of the world, right? So I guess I'm pointing out that there's ways to improve the leverage of the citizenry over these kinds of legal protections.
Yeah, and it all filters back, as we mentioned, to faith and confidence in institutions, ultimately in the economy and into financial markets. So it'll ultimately translate to issues on jobs, on investment, how much outside foreign investment is coming into the country. So all of those levels are affected by this as the implications.
Right, right. And I guess all that we can do as citizens is just make sure that our voice is heard, that where this is unacceptable, you know, the erosion of property rights and privacy laws is not acceptable to us. And so, and that is that, and in the demand for transparency in the debates about how to protect these rights, you know, those I think are critical. And so, you know, just talking about it on this podcast is one small step in that direction.
Well, great. It's been a fantastic, insightful discussion. How can our listeners learn more about your work, Charles?
Yeah, please visit me at oftwominds.com. You can read free sample chapters of my books, and all my archives are free.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Charles.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.